Blog Talk Radio.
There's a kiss. There's a light. There's a kiss. There's a light in your heart. You just can't contain it when we are. There's a light in your heart. You just can't contain it when we all play our part around the world. It's just so amazing. With our hands and our hearts, we can build this bridge.
welcome to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams, coming to you from Cottonwood, Alabama. We have pretty much overcast skies as we're expecting some rain today, but, you know, this is the season, and this is the season for our emerging harvest. So lots of seeds are being planted, and we're starting to see our gardens grow and our flowers bloom. Very beautiful environment this time of year. And as we, you know, I sat here in my office the other day, and I'm looking out and going through the internet, and I saw this article, Monsanto's Roundup Threatens Stability of Global Food Supply. This was an article written by Nation of Change reporter Anthony Gussardi. I think I'm pronouncing his name correct. And let me read just a little bit of this. Monsanto's reckless disregard for public health and the agricultural stability of the planet may be even more significant than previously thought. A shocking new report reveals how Monsanto's Roundup is actually threatening the crop-yielding potential of the entire biosphere. Wow. The report reveals that glyphosate, which was developed by Monsanto in the early 1970s and is the active ingredient in its patented herbicide Roundup, may be irreversibly devastating the microbiodiversity of the soil, compromising the health of the entire planet as a result. Well, as soon as I read that, and there's other things we'll make notes of as we go, I said, I need to get my agricultural advisor on the show, because we've got to talk about this. We've talked about GMOs before and so forth. But as we're talking about getting our gardens in place and growing our food, I think that we need to revisit this whole, all the issues that Monsanto raises for us as we look at food production. But not only that, reading this article, it was also the food chain itself. And so I asked our expert, Ron Ellis, to join me on Peace Talks today because, you know, people might say, well, what does this have to do with peace? It has to do with peace because, to me, holding the vision for peace, acting for peace in whatever way that comes to you is the most revolutionary act anyone can do, because once you stand for peace, you begin to realize and serve an emerging paradigm, and that emerging paradigm is one of peace, is one of harmony, is justice, it's righteousness for all human beings. And once you hold that vision and you can actually see that emerging paradigm in your vision, then you have to stand up for those things that are outside of that. And so, Ron, welcome to Peace Talk on Now Time Radio, and you know I am looking forward for us getting started on this conversation.
Well, Audrey, yeah, thank you so much for having me once again. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you, and especially with these sorts of topics, because the public in general doesn't hear enough about it. There's so much, and this is a very dangerous situation, all of what Monsanto and the rest are doing. On a positive note, though, I'm sitting in my car. It's kind of windy outside, and I'll try to step out if it's not too windy in a little bit, overlooking our farm here at Verbena, Alabama, which is right off of Interstate 65, smack dab in the middle between Birmingham and Montgomery. So we're 45 miles from Birmingham and 45 miles from Montgomery, which is, of course, the nation's civil rights capital. And I'm looking out on these really beautiful raised beds. You know, since you and I talked the last time about this, we have over 500 100-square-foot raised beds, and they are blooming beautiful crimson clover. We have collard greens coming up, and if you're in the South, you know you got to have them collard greens. They're coming up everywhere. We've got lettuces. We've planted gourmet potatoes. As a matter of fact, the last 3 days we've been planting potatoes by the biodynamic calendar, and all the fancy varieties, the Peruvian blue, the old purple, the Yukon gold, the rose apple thin fingerling, the peanut fingerling, and all of these others. And we have a tremendous demand right now for anything that we touch. We have people coming to us saying, what are you going to plant? And they say, well, can we contract to get it when it comes up? So that's
whatever it is, right, Ron?
Whatever you guys are coming up with as we do on. The fall crop was just wonderful. Again, the traditional southern garden with your collards and your mustards and your turnips and your cauliflower and broccoli and all of those things. And we planted that, of course, last October, and it fed us just wonderfully right through the spring. And as I look out over plot number one, which is the first 52 beds we did, we still have some of those beds still producing crop. We're still getting Brussels sprouts, for instance. We're still getting spinach out of those particular beds, even as we begin to turn some under and plant some other things. So it's just wonderful. Wonderful. Yep.
Well, one of the things that I'm hearing, Ron, as we talk about, you know, I always say, you know, like as a peace activist, I'm serving this emerging paradigm, so that what you're talking about is the emerging paradigm of how we can take back control of our food production, how we can, and it's really going back to the old ways, and be responsible for, you know, connecting with our own production capability and doing it in a right way, producing
mm-hmm.
good, healthy food that supports life rather than takes life.
Exactly. You know, I always tell people, I mean, it's scary whenever I, you know, give talks and whatnot and lay out what Monsanto is doing and what the Gentech companies and the big agribusiness companies are doing, you know, it's a very scary situation, but there's hope. We can beat them. I mean, they're not invincible. They can be beaten. They have come to the power that they have very surreptitiously, in a very evil manner. They buy people. They buy and sell members of Congress. They buy and sell people in power in our governments at the local level, at the national level, at the international level. There's constantly this influence. And interestingly enough, before I forget this, here a year or so ago, Monsanto hired, of all organizations, it hired Blackwater to help in its so-called security issues. But in effect, what it hired Blackwater to do is to spy on farmers, to use goon and strong-arm tactics to intimidate farmers, not just here in the United States, but all over the world, in India and parts of Africa. The only ones that have gotten it right so far in terms of dealing with Monsanto are the Haitians. In the aftermath of the earthquake, Monsanto sent its genetically modified corn and soybeans and canola into Haiti, saying, here, you can have these for free. We're going to help you people get back on your feet. And the Haitians said, no, thank you. We know what you've done to agriculture and to people all over the world, how you've poisoned the environment, how you've poisoned individuals, and we don't want any of this. And we know that if we partake of your free gift, it'll be like partaking of crack. You know, we'll be hooked on this stuff forever, and then we'll won't be able to go back to our conventional agriculture. So it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and I think,
is,
Ron, let me just interject here. I wanted to just bring a couple of points here. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this show today, I see a lot of farmers using that Roundup, you know, and even gardeners, you know, buying various concentrations of Roundup to kill the weeds and so forth in the gardens. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring the show, have this show today and then populate the show over the next couple of weeks is that in this particular article, it talked about how Roundup is attacking the microorganisms responsible for most of the health content of raw and fermented foods. And
sure.
In fact, the largest inhabitant of the web of life are the microorganisms. And they're the ones that function at the root level, you know, like, the, you know, of the nitrogen, phosphate, oxygen, carbon cycles, and are therefore indispensable for the health of the entire biosphere. So Roundup is getting down into the soil, attacking these microorganisms at rates that, you know, this article actually was quite alarming at how it is affecting, like, say, was it mycelium and other microorganisms that really help to balance out this whole food chain. And so we have to be very careful because the other thing that is happening with the use of some of these pesticides, then these super weeds are coming up, you know, sprouting up, and these weeds are taking over, and they're very difficult to kill. And then the other with the genetically modified seeds, as most of us do know, is that they don't reproduce. And so for a farmer who is poor, you know, may not have the capital of the big corporate farm, you know, if they get caught up in this Monsanto seeds, and we see this happening in Asia and Africa and in the South and different places, you know, farmers grow these crops, and then when they go to, you know, to get their seed bank for the next year, none of these seeds produce. But the other part of the byproduct of that, if I have a farm here and you have your farm, you know, over across the street, then when the pollen comes, your pollen is blowing over into my seeds, and now I don't know what of my seeds are going to produce. And so it affects that, you know. So I want people to just be mindful as we do our gardens, to be very careful of what we are purchasing to get rid of our weeds. And I'm going to ask you, Ron, to talk about ways that you control your beds in a way that you don't have to go to Roundup and other pesticides that destroy the food chain.
Yeah, well, as I always say, the you know, every answer, you know, as in the beginning, so ever shall it be, all of the answers that we need to grow healthy crops and to fight pests and disease are in nature itself. The way we prepare the soil, the way we pay attention, you know, another biblical admonition is to be still and to know, which means to look at nature and see how nature does things. You won't see monocropping anywhere in nature, okay? Nature mixes and matches because it is at these edges, at these borderlines between species that all the dynamism occurs, that all the creativity occurs. And the way we go about this is simply to use all natural substances. You know, we use cow manure. We use composted cow manure. We grow a lot of our fertility by growing crimson clover and alfalfa and other what we call legumes in the soil to produce fertility. We don't need, it is possible, really, it is possible to have a nearly closed system in your backyard or on your farm or garden or wherever you happen to be growing things, in which everything you need, and eventually you can grow it right there on your property, and you don't need to constantly be running to the store. And you know, I tell people, you know, get them out of your pocket, and there are ways that you can get them out of your pocket. We use a number of things, including what's called companion planting, and I think I've said this before. If I'm planting potatoes, then potato beetles, those little black potato beetles, are hugely devastating potato plants. Well, to keep them away, I plant bush beans because potato beetles just absolutely hate them and won't come anywhere near a bush bean. And the same is true of bean beetles. They won't come anywhere near potatoes, so we plant these two things together, and it's a win-win situation. And there are literally hundreds and thousands of such relationships between plants. And so go online, go and punch into Google, companion planting, and there's a whole wealth of information. There are charts, there are free charts, and it shows you where to go. There are books to buy and things of this nature to easily introduce you to this so you know what to plant together and what to do. And there are certain plants, of course, that we put in, like, for instance, the clover. The other day when we were getting ready and surveying where we were going to plant potatoes this week, we said, okay, let's make sure that we leave some of the red clover in place, because we look down into the red clover that's blossoming, the crimson clover, and there were ladybugs everywhere laying their eggs all through this, and when those eggs hatch, they'll produce a little larva that will eat up bad insects. So they will go from one bed to the next eating aphids and spider mites and all of these other things that infest our crops. So, again, these are among the ways in which you, in a very natural way, take care. You just really don't need any of those bad things. You don't need any of these things that you're spraying around and whatnot. And even to the point where there is something you need, let's say you have a bad infestation of aphids and don't have a large enough population of ladybugs to knock them off, well, you can make a garlic spray with a little cayenne pepper in it and whatnot. And there are ways, many, many other things that you can do besides going to the store, spending valuable money that most of us don't have in this day and age, on products that are minimally effective. Healthy plants will repel bad insects. They'll repel disease as well. If the soil is healthy, if those mycelium are in there and healthy, and those mycorrhizae are in there doing their job, then you don't need all this man-made stuff. And this is the fallacy of agribusiness and this technological farming, is that we don't need any of that stuff. But what they do is they create a demand, tell you you need something, and then you go, oh, yeah, I need that, and then you go buy it without using your head and without relying on on your ancestral knowledge, which is there for each and every one of us. It's in our DNA. But we fall for every trick in the book, and Monsanto and the big Gentech companies are part of that dog and pony show, the big circus that comes to town, and that fools us, you know, into doing things that we shouldn't do. Then we find out later on, as we're finding out now with you and your study there, is the stuff is poison, and in fact, it is not doing the job, and it is introducing a whole nother line of problems that, in this case, may haunt us for the rest of our lives. Because once this contamination starts, it's like there's no end to it. And of all people, think about it. Who is Monsanto, right? These are the people who were responsible for manufacturing, along with Dow Chemical, Agent Orange. And I've got plenty, I'm a veteran, and I've got plenty of veteran buddies who are been grossly, seriously affected. Some of them died from Agent Orange. And many are in very, very bad shape today because of it, running back and forth to the VA all the time. And the government is paying for it, though they still don't want to admit to it. They want to protect Monsanto. Monsanto is that same company, okay? Now we've turned over our food, and essentially what happens is that we produce something for war purposes, and this has happened time and time again throughout history. Then, when the war is over and we've got all this production capability, in this case, Agent Orange, a kissing cousin of Roundup, 2,4-T, 2,4-D, that's all the same thing, okay, we say, okay, so what can we do? Well, we can spray it on our food crops to kill herbs, to kill weeds and whatnot, okay? And now we've got that same madness. So these are the people, Monsanto also introduced DDT back in the 1950s. And had
that's
commercials. And had commercials that said DDT is good for me. And I'll never forget one of the ads that they used to run in newspapers and magazines. It was a cow, a chicken, a housewife, her cute little child, and some other animals and butterflies and stuff dancing across the page. And they were singing a tune that said, DDT is good for me, DDT is good for me. DDT, the most treacherous poison probably ever created. Okay, we banned it. Okay, of course, we let them use it in Mexico where they also grow our food and then re-import the stuff. So, you know, it's all a great big old joke and the dog and pony show. But why would you allow a company with a track record like that to produce any food that you were thinking about putting in your body? It's great.
And then, Ron, we've got the whole NutraSweet, aspartame.
Oh, sure. That is an incredible thing, not just in terms of what it does to the physiology of the body, but how it also affects the human mind. And it is falls in that category of what we call neuroexciters. And it makes it just like MSG does, which is also a neuroexciter, it makes it very hard for you to control your emotions. So we have all of these issues of kids in school who can't pay attention. Everybody is being diagnosed with ADD or some form of it. And all of these things mess with your nervous system. And saccharin and NutraSweet and all of those artificial sweeteners that were initially used as part of the poison gas complex, right? Mustard gas and all these other things. That's where that stuff comes from. And they concocted it, changed the formulation a bit. And when you're out there in your yard and you see people doing it all the time, they've got their little bottle of Roundup. And they're bent over in the sidewalk, spritzing weeds and whatnot. And they most people have no idea that this stuff is the same as Agent Orange. Okay.
Exactly. A point that I hadn't really given enough consideration to, and that is that sometimes the wartime industries. When they create the infrastructure, when the war is over, then begin to look at these products and modify them for consumer purposes. And we don't make the connection between, say, an Agent Orange and Roundup, or between an Agent Orange and even NutraSweet.
This is a show like yours is so very important, and what your network is doing is so very important, because this information has never really traditionally gotten out, and now that most of the mainstream media is corporatized, it almost never gets out except through venues like you, through things like Food Freedom, some of the consumer groups that are online and are doing internet radio shows and TV shows and whatnot to pass the information around. To put a too fine a point on this, in fact, I don't think you can put too fine a point on it, is that my background is I was in media. I was a radio and a TV news reporter for many years. And I worked for CBS News. I was a writer and a reporter for the CBS radio network for about 11 years. And I was there in the 1980s when the late infamous Lawrence Tisch came in and bought majority ownership of CBS, him and his billionaire buddies. And they immediately began to attack the news department. Tisch was in a running battle on the front pages of the New York Times with Dan Rather and Mike Wallace and other people inside of CBS. The idea was to attack them and to bring their credibility into question. And who was Tisch? Among other things, he was an incredible green mailer and takeover expert. That's how he and his brother became billionaires. And his brother, of course, worked for Ronald Reagan as his postmaster general. And they came into CBS and essentially tore the joint apart. That's why the stories that you see on 60 Minutes now are so mamby-pamby versus what you used to see years ago when they were really kicking butt and taking names because they didn't have to worry about that. But once the takeover specialists like Tisch came in, they turned the thing upside down and they attacked everything we did. They wouldn't let us report on the savings and loan scandal. Why? Because, as we found out months later, is they didn't want us doing in-depth reporting. The surfacey reporting was fine. You know, the headline stuff was fine. But in-depth investigative reporting, because as it turned out, Tisch's family and its billionaire buddies were planning to buy the real estate assets of the Bank of New England, which was about to crash. And we had inside information that told us what was going on, and they didn't want us saying anything about it because they wanted the bank to crash. And it's these kinds of people who are keeping the flow of information about people like Monsanto and these other dastardly companies from getting to the ears of the public. That's what we're up against. And if you think this ain't a war, you really better go back to your kitchen table and think about this some more. we're talking about an industry, food industry in America is worth $1 trillion a year. Okay,
wow.
Monsanto, the other Gentech companies, the big chemical companies, want to get control of food production, not just here, but around the world. When you throw in China, you're probably looking at about $6 or $7 trillion a year in value, and they are seeking to gain control, and you think they're going to let you take that away from them without a fight? No, sir. They are spending. And the other thing I would like to say, too, is I was a lobbyist at one time, a very bad word these days, and it should be. I was working for a big business association in the state of Alabama, and I know what it takes to buy a vote. I know what the red dress parties are. And these lawmakers, these people that you're sending to the legislatures and Congress and City Hall and whatnot, they'll do anything to be wined and dined with fine women. In a lot of cases, the money isn't even important. It's who they got with last night. That's the kind of mentality that is running the government. And this is the kind of thing. There's no morality. It hasn't been for a very long time. There's no integrity. It hasn't been for a very long time. And we must reinsert ourselves into this process. And the way we do that is stop buying their junk. Stop buying processed food. Start yourself a garden. Get these people out of your pocket, because if you don't, they're going to kill you.
Yeah, and the other way you do it, too, is if you have money and you're investing in the market, make sure you're not supporting these companies like Monsanto and others who are really having, devastating our environment, sort of short-term gratification at the expense of long-term devastation. So, you know, we have to be wise about what we're putting into our bodies, what we are doing with our resources, because you said earlier in the show, we can come together and change this, but it's going to take us all engaging in what is really common sense. If you're, I'm a grandmother. I've got 7 grandkids, another one on the way. I want the world to be better for them. I'm more concerned that my life makes an impact for their well-being and the generations that will come after them. And if we take that approach, which, our Native American brothers and sisters, always had this 7-generation consciousness, if we think that we're going to make better decisions in the short run to affect the long term. But if you're thinking with money and power and greed, you go for the short run and let the long run, let those generations take care of themselves. So, I think it requires us to become much more slow things down enough that we can really think. And when I slow things down, there's so many. They talk about weapons of mass destruction, but we've got to be conscious of the weapons of mass distraction that keep us off center, keep us, in this game of consumerism and lost to the real world in which we're living and how we are so powerful. We are so powerful, and we have to get back to that in order to really turn this around. The good news, though, Ron, is I'm talking to more and more people and finding that people are wanting more and more information, and they are making changes in their lives. So I'm encouraged when I hear you talk about the 500 beds you put in, and, we go down here with some of our local farmers and pick our greens and turnips, rutabagas, and that's what we've been picking lately. And some, what else did we get this last weekend? We got some carrots. Oh, carrots are so sweet. So, take our kids out there on the farms and let's get our hands back in the soil. There's a quote by, I wanted to read a quote, and bear with me 1 second, by Franklin and Delano Roosevelt. And the quote said, basically, the nation that destroys its soil destroys itself. So as we get our hands back in the dirt, let's get reconnected to the foundation of everything that is life, and build it up, So let's talk a little bit, Ron, about people who are just starting to get their gardens ready now. Is it too late to get your garden? Because we're kind of behind the calendar a little bit on what we're doing. We're just getting started. What should we be thinking about right now?
Well, one of the things that I would do is I would start investing in a little bit of reading time. Let me see. There is a book, and I've mentioned it before, I think. I'm not sure. There is a book called How to Grow More Vegetables. And as simple as that, How to Grow More Vegetables. It's by John Jevons. John Jevons, J-E-A-V as in Victor, O-N-S as in Sam, John Jevons. And there are several other books. He has one called The Backyard Mini Farm and book. And you can find these books probably on Amazon, or if you want to sort of generally look at what's available from these people, they are called Bountiful Gardens. .com. Just go on and you'll find those two books. The Backyard Mini Farm has a number of zone calendars in it to tell you what you can plant. Now, we are in one of the longest growing seasons around here in Central Alabama. We've got the 240-day planting calendar. Okay, there's no reason at all you can't be planting and harvesting year-round here if you got the time and you're so inclined to do so. You can grow all of your food that you need, and especially if you've got a vegetarian diet, all the food that you need can be grown in one quarter of the space that it would take if you did row crops, because we use the raised beds. But in terms of what to plant, you can also check with, the county extension agent thing. They've got some calendars about what to plant when and that kind of thing. You can go on to Mother Earth News, and they've got a website called Mother Earth News, What to Plant Now. That's another good one that you can check out. That's basically free of charge. You pick the region that you're in and then pull that up, and every month it tells you what you can be planting. And again, in our climate here, we started off planting typical winter crops, Swiss chard and lettuces and broccoli, collards, that kind of thing, in October. And it just bore for us right into the springtime. Well, okay, then over the winter, like January, February, you're starting seedlings of your hot weather things, on some of your cool season crops, tomatoes and eggplants and bell peppers and things like that. You're starting those inside, and then by April you're ready to set them out. So you can have a continuous flow of things. You never have to give out of food if you plan the thing right. But again, to plan it right, you've got to get the calendars. The Mother Earth News thing, the Bountiful Garden stuff and whatnot, and take a look at that. You're never too late, because even if you're in a climate that's cold and sort of inhospitable this time of year, in January, February, March, that kind of thing, or in the fall even, for instance. The fall is a good time because you got fall leaves. Round up all your fall leaves, get yourself some 3-foot high chicken wire. It's cheap. Build yourself a corral and keep dumping your fall leaves into that. You can throw on some compost starter if you want to help it break down a lot faster. But if you get leaf mold in it by the time the spring rolls around, and then you can take that and dig that right into your soil. And this is the most important thing, like the Roosevelt quote, if you destroy your soil, you ain't got nothing. Well, if you want beautiful gardens, healthy plants, what you have to do is build healthy soil. Fall leaves are an excellent way to build healthy soil. So you can build and make compost piles if you want, or just leaf piles. Add some compost starter to those leaves. Keep them reasonably wet during the wintertime. And then by this time of the year, you've got leaf mold that you can dig into your beds. And when you dig that in, then you bring in all the other critters. Earthworms just love them. When I plant my potatoes, my springtime potato crop, which really is before spring. I'm starting to, around here, we're putting potatoes out in February, actually, February and March, and can plant them every month right up until July. And I dig in the first thing, like around February or so, I take my leaf mold, dig it into my beds, let it sit for several weeks, okay, and then as it breaks down some more, it draws in these big, beautiful earthworms, and they're everywhere. Then I plant my potatoes in it. And when I put the potatoes in there, the earthworms are circulating around, and the earthworm droppings, or what we call earthworm castings, which are very, very expensive, one of the most beautiful, complete fertilizers that you can get. And they come around the potatoes, around the roots, and start putting their fertilizer in there, and the potatoes take off, do a wonderful, wonderful job. Then a week or two later, I put in my bush beans in among the potatoes and around the edges of the bed to act again as my insect repellent, my potato bug repellent. All right,
oh.
So that kind of a thing. So at any rate, just find information about your timing. There's no reason to ever stop. And even, like I said, even in cold climates, if you're further up the East Coast where you're in the snow belt and things like that, there are people who've perfected that system where they're using cold frames, they're using little cheap greenhouse overbed type things, plastic greenhouses to extend the season and that kind of thing. And if you go to my website, which is my blog site, you will see these little mini greenhouses. Again, they're real cheap for $20, $30.
Ron, we got to get your blog site. Let's get your blog site.
Okay. It is blog.springmeadoworganics, and that's organic with an S, springmeadoworganics.com. Okay, blog.springmeadoworganics.com. And then
okay.
You'll see, and I show you how to build them on there. I show you how to get them right. And again, it's real cheap thing to do. And in the fall, like last fall, I put in all of the tender lettuces and things of that nature under that, and that will keep you in lettuces. So the frost, because even out here we'll get freezing every once in a while, and you only need one 32-degree night, and it will knock off your tender things, your real tender lettuces and Swiss chard and things like that. But
hey Ron, I got a question for you. This is kind of I was telling you we went to the farm over the weekend, and we got our collard greens and carrots and turnips, and we got a lot of turnips. And I can't eat all these turnips. What are some creative things that can be done with turnips? Do you have any ideas? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot there, but
one of the things for sure. I mean, are you talking about the green top or the root bottom?
The bottom.
Okay, the bottom part.
One of them is to
preserve them. Freezing is good for anything. So you can take those turnip roots, slice them, blanch them, and blanching is just, getting some hot water going and dip them in there for a couple of minutes, pull them out, drain them, let them cool for a little bit, throw them in Ziploc bags and throw them up in the freezer, okay?
Okay.
So present, you do anything like that. I mean, all your greens, especially, that's what we've been doing this week because we had so many collards left over and Brussels sprouts and things like that. So we had the guys out cutting collards and chopping them up, blanching them so we can throw them in the freezer. And again, this is just left over from our winter crop and whatnot. So you can do a lot of that.
Full of collards, but that's my favorite. I could eat them every day.
Oh, yeah, and they blanch real well. Savoy cabbage, the same thing, regular red cabbage and green cabbages, Boston Market cabbage.
Yeah.
Those will blanch up real easy, throw them in the freezer.
Ron, question for you, for an inquiring mind like me. How come, why can't you just take the collards and put them in a bag, you know, clean them real good, chop them up, and put them in a baggie without blanching them? Why do you blanch them?
Because what will happen is that they'll get freezer burned. And so you need to start to do what is essentially a little partial cook, really. And that stops the process of decay, too, which you will get even freezing. I mean, because, you know, you throw things up in the freezer long enough, the air eventually gets to them, and the breakdown process with all the gases and whatnot starts even when it's frozen. So, but when you blanch it in that, dip it in that hot water for a couple of minutes or so, then that stops the process, okay?
All right.
Freeze them, and then they'll stay fresh for a year or more.
Okay, so with the back to the turnips now, so I blanch them, cut them up, freeze them. Are there any other uses? Are turnips good for our compost pile, the ones that we, you know, maybe we can't use them all? I like to use everything in whatever way we can. I hate to waste stuff. Are they good for composting?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, any of your material, you don't want to be putting cooked food into your compost pile. So you want raw stuff, your trimmings and your leftovers and your wasted stuff from the garden, including vines and all that kind of stuff goes into a compost pile. But in terms of the uses of turnips, you know, that's a recipe thing. We make various kinds of soups. We're real big on making soups, and it works real good when you've got a fall crop of turnips and potatoes and things like that. We make a soup that is turnip and potato soup with herbs and that kind of thing. One day I'll post the recipe. I got so much to do. Just forgive me. We're just running crazy around here. We got so much going on, but we'll eventually get through to it because we have at this Verbena Hills, and we're still, by the way, working on the specific website for this farm. But it's called Verbena Hills Biodynamic Organic Farms, and so keep an eye. Just write that down, and then visit in a couple weeks. The site may be up. But we're working on that right now. And
you'll post it on your blog spot when you have it up and going, right?
And I will also post it on blog.springmeadoworganics.com. I'll post it there so you can get to the website. But we are in the business here of teaching, and we have invited a bunch of the schools to come and bring the kids so that they can walk around the grounds and we can talk to them about what they see. They can come and help us plant, that kind of thing. We want to work with anybody, and if you were living in another state, fine. You know, you can come over for the day, or you can come for the weekend, or whatever. But we're in the process of teaching, and we want to sort of get into the agritourism thing eventually, I guess. But right now, it's like anybody is welcome to show up here. We're here. All the time, there's always somebody here walking around, working and whatnot. So just walk up and start asking questions. And everybody up here that works on this place knows a lot. Everybody up here is worth, by the end of a 15-minute conversation, is worth a degree to you or certainly some credit hours in a good program. So that's the kind of thing that we're about. And we want to encourage other people to do the same thing. Our children need to know this stuff. These are the next generations. And right now, the boogeyman has them, feeding them junk, messing up their minds, messing up their bodies. The sickness is out of control, and we got to stop it. You know, again, 2007 CDC's report out of Atlanta, the Center for Disease Control, on early childhood diabetes said that 1 in 3 in the general population, the children born in 2000, 1 in 3 can expect to have early onset diabetes, in other words, when they're adolescents. And among blacks, it is 1 in 2, meaning one half of our children can expect to have diabetes. Isn't that shameful?
And that loops us right back to where we started our program, in terms of the a lot of the genetically modified products, how they then get broken down into food sources that have no nutrition, and lots of corn fructose. Maybe we should take a couple of minutes and talk about that, you know, sweetened with that corn fructose and the impact that that's having on our young people and older people. And the other thing I wanted to say, Ron, you know, walking around the country, going into urban areas, especially those communities of color, whether we were on a reservation or whether we were in a city, especially, what we found was the food supply is so bad. If you live in one of these locations, we went into a market in South Central to get, I wanted to get some vegetables for the walkers when they came back. I was cooking a soup. And the quality of the vegetables was so, well, first of all, I had trouble finding them. When I did find them, they were so bad. The other thing is, we were on the reservation, the same thing, and even the meat were like meat you couldn't even sell in a regular grocery store out in suburban America. So we've got some real issues around how we are, what we're giving our people generally across the board, and especially in areas where food production is not very good. Now, one of the things we did in South Central was we got together with the little community there through the Center for Coalition for Mental Health, and in their parking lot was a little square of land, maybe 18 feet by 18 feet, and we actually helped them put in a community garden. So even in those environments, you know, once the consciousness is raised, you can begin to take control of your food supply. But I wanted to mention that, Ron, because, again, can you say a little bit about the corn fructose sweeteners?
Yeah, again, that and there's so many others, the same thing. I mean, the basics here is that these things are causing diseases of every kind. They're affecting us on every level, particularly where diabetes, where obesity are concerned and whatnot. It is the equivalent of taking drugs. I mean, of taking serious drugs. You may as well be on meth or crack when you're taking high fructose corn syrup. These are very, very dangerous to the body. To the emotional and mental makeup of a human being, they continue to put this stuff out there because, again, it's cheap, and this is what we have to understand about the fructose sweeteners and whatnot, and the soy and all these other things that they're packing into the processed foods. The stuff is cheap, and anything that's that cheap can't be good for you. It's just out and out just dangerous. And is causing huge health problems especially among the young. Their bodies are not resilient enough to fend off the effects of this stuff. They haven't had healthy food to build strong bodies. So when you throw these things at them, you're throwing at people who have weakened immune systems and generally weakened systems, period. That they're eating and they're not getting anything else, so it is killing us. The stuff is just killing us. One approach to take in terms of dealing with this, it's very hard because the media is responsible for pushing this stuff in our faces all the time. And if you're young, then you're even more susceptible, more vulnerable to these onslaughts. And they know what they're doing. Again, we have a government that could really care about any of this stuff, the Surgeon General or the Food and Drug Administration or the Department of Agriculture. Nobody really cares because they are in a situation where they're making huge money off of this stuff, right? The bureaucrats that have put in office, the ones that get appointed to these jobs at the FDA and the USDA and whatnot, and even all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. There's the joke that we have, sort of half-jokingly, but it's a very serious thing and very scary, Monsanto has a 5-4 majority on our U.S. Supreme Court. Okay? And why? Well, one of the people that writes the big decisions for Monsanto, he writes the majority opinion for Monsanto's rulings, is Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas used to be Monsanto's lawyer. The other four judges that make up that 5-4 majority either have worked as legal consultants for Monsanto or have members of their immediate family that are currently working for Monsanto in some capacity or other. And this is the kind of thing that we're up against. So they could really care, because Monsanto and people like that, like Clarence, for instance, is trying to put together a big museum project in his old hometown. Well, who's giving him money?
So Ron, what I want to do is, we're coming to where we're going to have to close out on this show. But you know, I anything comes up, I'd like to get you back on the air again. We can talk a little bit more as the seasons begin to change, perhaps to help inform folks who are trying to put in gardens and get. You know, I want to come up there and see what you're doing, and maybe even have you come down here and look at our land, and maybe you could even advise us, you know, what we should be doing. But I want to thank you so much for being on our show today. And I want to, again, for our listening audience, go to blog.springmeadoworganics.com. You can find out about the work that Ron is doing and the farm there, and he's going to be posting when the farm website is up so that we can all take advantage of looking at what's being done and maybe even organizing to come out there and visit you. I know for sure I want to get out there this year now that we are off the road. But Ron, thank you so much for being on Peace Talks here on Now Time Radio. And we will definitely be in touch. I'll probably air this show 2 or 3 times and put some publicity out there around it. We'll note your blog site there because I think, as always, you give us such good information. And really, honestly, 1 hour with you is just simply not enough. So I'll be calling you again. I want to tell you, take good care, and thanks for keeping us informed.
Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you so much. You know, you keep up what you're doing. You're doing a wonderful job. Thanks.
Thank you, Ron. You're listening to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. Up and running. I should say it is on its own course. And we just had, yesterday, we had William Smith from the Science of Spirituality did a workshop here last night on inner and outer peace through meditation. And it was great. We look forward to continuing to have William come in when he's in the Southeast region. If you want to know more about William Smith, you can go to the SOS, just Google SOS, Science of Spirituality, and his meditation center is located in Bowling Green, Virginia. Google it, click on it, find out all the wonderful things that they're doing there. Starting tomorrow, we will have the Leonard Peltier Walk for Human Rights coming through. They'll be with us for a few days, and we're hoping to take good care of them as they continue on their journey. They started in Alcatraz back in December, have walked across the country, gotten to Alabama, will head down into Florida, and back up the East Coast to Washington, D.C., around the mid. So we want to say, if you're interested in helping the walkers, go to their website, windchasesthesun.org, .com. And windchasesthesun.com, make a contribution to their efforts. You can go to audreyscottwilliams.com, find out the schedule, go under Quantum Leap Transformational Center. You can see the schedule there for the activities that will be Again, I just went online to make sure I was saying that correct. It's windchasesthesun.org. So you can go there. There's a donate button. Help with gas, help with food, whatever their needs are. They're doing an incredible thing walking for Leonard Peltier. We want to see Leonard Peltier free. 36 years in prison is too much. Next week, tune in again for Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. Have a great week. And, you know, take some time. Get out there in the sun. Plant a couple of seeds and watch them grow. Peace. Be that peace advocate. Serve an emerging paradigm. Let's look to the future and live into the possibility of who we are.